50 years ago, I know that makes some people quiver already when I say that. 20 years ago, almost to the day, I put on my brand new Elm to prepare for the Eucharist on my first Sunday here. Why a new Elm? Well, I'm a little rough around the edges at the best of times, as some of you know, but my former one was a little bit stained and worn. So I wanted a fresh start to symbolize a new beginning, to clothe myself, in the words of Colossians, in something new and pure and unblemished. So just before the service, just like today, we gather. Presider, preacher, who is myself, and servers, preparing for the procession. But the alb I was wearing didn't feel quite right. It was so new, and I was so nervous that I kept fussing with it, trying to adjust it to get it just right. So one of the servers, who was probably tired of seeing me fuss and fiddle, whose partner was the other server, finally said, "What's wrong?" And without thinking, I said, "I don't know. Am I straight?" I kid you not. And without missing a beat, she says, "Yes, honey, but you're the only one." I can't tell you how many times I've dined out on that story. And in keeping with the reading from Ecclesiastes and speaking a little bit about vanity today, I have to tell you this. I'm wearing that elb today, and look, it still fits perfectly. Sincerely, though, that encounter taught me something. Taught me something about the very nature of God. That was revealed and is reflected in this community. What I learned from that encounter was this, that God's very nature delights in diversity. And it is in that image that we are created. God and this community does not just tolerate diversity, does not merely embrace diversity. God and this community delights in diversity, which makes me so grateful to be back here. And this community so delighted in diversity, sharing that joy and being playful about its diversity in my first moments here, that made me so grateful. So on my first day, you gave it to me straight. Paul wants to do that too. To be straight with us, to be straight with the Colossians, and to help the Colossians clothe themselves in something new. He wants to help them clothe themselves in a relationship with God and one another where they delight in their diversity, where there is no longer Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free, gay or straight, but Christ as all in all. That's what Paul desired for the Colossians, because that image of delighting in diversity is the image of God in which we were all created. discard those practices that distort the image of God in us. All the vices that he lists. And especially those practices that can become for us idols. Because idols take the place of God at the very center of our lives. And for all of the catalog of vices that he mentions, if you noticed, it is only greed that he equates with idolatry. So, why is greed idolatry? Well, it is because greed empties our lives of what truly gives them meaning. Relationships with God and with one another that delight in diversity. And greed replaces those relationships with things or with nothing meaningful. The Greek word for greed that both Paul and Luke use in today's gospel is pleonexia. And it literally means the more you have, the more you want. The more you have, the more you want. The more you have, the more you want. It's meant to paint a picture of this endless cycle of unhealthy desire. A place where we have all been in our own lives. A place and a time where we fill our lives with things that we think will fill us and make us whole, but actually only end up making us feel empty and alone. And Paul and Jesus in Luke's gospel are not merely talking about the superficial nature of physical greed. They're talking about the much deeper nature of spiritual greed and how it alienates us from God and one another. Because the spiritual side of greed is this. Greed would have us look to tomorrow for happiness, when joy is often there for the asking today. Greed would tell us that if only we were somewhere else, or with someone else, then maybe we might be fulfilled. So often ignoring how, where we are, and who we are with, is what often truly satisfies us. In the end, greed creates an emptiness that can never be filled, like an endless hunger. And so, in the gospel, one in the crowd, who's just been fed recently with the other 5,000, comes hungering for something different, comes with an unhealthy desire. He approaches Jesus looking for more, because who he is and what he has will never be enough. The man says, "Tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." Jesus and the crowd listen, perplexed in a way that we might not understand, because they know what he is asking. The book of Numbers and the book of Deuteronomy make it painstakingly clear that the oldest son inherits double of his siblings. So guess who's come begging today? This younger son is looking for more than what he's entitled to, more than his share, more than what the law and prophets have ordained as enough. But he will never know enough. And knowing that there shouldn't even be a dispute about it, Jesus answers, enters the brother and warns the whole crowd to beware of all kinds of greed. And to illustrate this point, he tells them the parable of the rich farmer or the rich fool. Again, the crowd listening would have thought the farmer was mad with greed, would not have understood even the parable for all that it contradicts all that they thought and believed and who they were. First of all, the farmer's whole emphasis is on himself. Do you think you've met narcissists in your day? This guy takes the cake. He talks of himself to himself. He gives no thanks. He makes no reference to God's graciousness in providing all this abundance that he's looking to hoard. And the people of Israel, more than anyone in the Palestine Delta, were painfully conscious of how fragile the harvest was, how fragile their lives were, how much they depended on God's grace for every bite they put into their mouth. So it would be unthinkable for a farmer not to give thanks in this parable. Give thanks to God by offering a portion of the first fruits. It's simply not there. And not only does this farmer not make an offering, he doesn't even mention God in what is essentially a narcissistic soliloquy. If you listen carefully, you heard, "My barn, my crops, my grain, my goods," and the exclamation point. He even says, "My soul." And what's more, he hoards and is wasteful with this wealth. Not only does he not share it with those who are less fortunate, which the law demands, but he tears down his barns and builds brand new ones just so he can store it all. Did you notice? He doesn't build new barns in addition to the old ones. He tears down perfectly good old barns. None of it makes sense. And none of it would make sense to Jesus' listeners. It would have been a caricature speaking against grace and gratitude towards God. None of it makes sense. And that's because it's not supposed to. Because at the heart of greed is the irrational fear that there will not be enough. That's what motivates all of the physical and spiritual greed in all of our lives. It's what Paul is speaking to in the Colossians, and it's what we encounter in every character in this gospel. The fear that somehow there will never be enough. The man who wants his brother's inheritance, the rich fool, both cannot grasp and will never see God's abundance because they're afraid. Afraid that there will not be enough. this is where we are supposed to begin today. As we begin this ministry that we will share, we have to begin trusting. Trusting mostly in the abundance of God's grace in our lives, and letting go of our fear. You have welcomed me as your priest. Part of being able to trust is telling you from my heart how grateful. Come to this place with you, day by day, Sunday by Sunday, to delight in your diversity, to reflect the image of God in whom we are created, and to be fed by God's grace together as a community is such a precious gift that I long to share. You've also invited me to share in witnessing how we can be filled in this place with the presence of God and share that abundance with all whose lives we touch in this place and beyond, where our ministry begins at the corner, as we say. I need to tell you how hopeful I am for our ministry together at the corner. Because ministry at the corner is a metaphor for us. It reflects the image and the one in whom we were created. In ministry at the corner, we imitate our Redeemer, Jesus Christ. For just as God came into the world clothed